I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey there, and welcome back to Amazing FPA. Today I've got a very important topic to talk about, and that is the so-called topic of product research. I use the term with inverted commas because I think that the entire wording of that just shoves you down the rabbit hole, but it's a wrong rabbit hole. It's never going to make you rich, and neither are keywords. That's a bit of a clue to what I'm going to talk about. So I want to talk about this because I've been discussing this sort of thing with a mentoring client recently who just started working with me, and he owns an existing business and knows a lot about a particular area. And I said, well, why don't you start with that? Not only starting with what you know in general, but specifically the kind of person you work with. And there's an even bigger clue. So if you feel that working on your own is leaving you isolated and mystified and not motivated, and you're just paralyzed by indecision or by excess of information or just by analysis, paralysis by analysis, then it could be that you need some help. I offer help in two principal ways these days. One is through online mentoring, and the other one is face-to-face mastermind. I just want to talk about mentoring for a second because it's not cheap. I charge good money for my services, and for good reason, because if it's done with the right person, then it and that person is in a position to succeed because of who they are and what they've done and the sort of finances and time constraints that they have, or rather that they have enough time and enough money, then that can really, really shove you forward at a rate that nothing else is going to do. Famously, the return on investment for good coaching is very, very high, normally in the order of several 100% if you've got the right coach and the right kind of person working with the coach. For that reason, I only work with a select few people. Obviously, I have very limited time, and that time is allocated only to people who I truly believe I can help. If I don't think I can help you, I will turn you away. I've had people actively offer me their money, and I've said, no, I won't work with you because I don't believe I can get your result. So that is how I operate. I hope it doesn't come across as arrogant, but I just know that it's only worth working with people who I can help. I'm not interested in taking money off people for the sake of it, and I will often be the first person to terminate a coaching relationship if I feel that it's not going to help a person. So anyway, I'm not going to go on about that, but if you want to find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring, and you can find out more. And if you're serious, you can apply there in writing. You'll need to jump through a few hoops. It'll take about 5 minutes to fill the form in, and then we'll arrange a conversation if I think that you are a suitable candidate. But coming back to this point, and this point came up in mentoring, so I'm very, very connected with what my actual target wants, if you like, my target market within Amazing FBA. And so that leads me back to this whole question of product research. Why is that wrong? Well, let me just put this to you. Products will never make you money. They will always cost you money. Products won't make you money. Don't make you a penny. They cost you lots of money. Now, you might say that keyword research is the word that I'm after or the concept I'm after. And you'd be right, but I don't think it goes far enough. Here's the thing. If you go on Amazon and you think product-centric, you'll start getting obsessed with physical widgets. And sooner or later, you'll find yourself doing what Jim Cockrum from the PAC, Proven Amazon course, calls lipstick on a pig marketing, which is basically you've got 1,000 widgets from China. You've now got them in Amazon. Now what do? You start going on about how wonderful they are on the listing. You use magic words. You do some keywords research at that stage in order to shove out the widget you've got. You do aggressive launch strategies. You do aggressive Amazon pay-per-click and whatever else it takes to move the stuff, because you are driven by the fear that you are going to have a warehouse full of stuff, or a garage if you're foolish enough to do it. FBM, that is fulfilled by merchant, full of stuff. And nobody's going to buy it. Or a phenomenon that Taki Moore, who's another very smart businessman, calls garage full, wallet empty, which I think is very funny, but it ain't funny when it's happening to you, because I've been there. We've all been there, right? The truth is, that's a foolish way of doing it. That's product centered. Instead, I don't think keywords are enough, because behind a keyword is a person. And I think understanding a person, a type of person, a very, very specific type of person, is very important. Specifically, the person and their pain or their passion. For example, if I go on Amazon and I look for dumbbells, and I think I could sell a pair of dumbbells that looks a little bit better than the ones out there, I can ship them in a little bit cheaper and sell them. That's one approach, right? That's the product-centric approach. I'm going to look for dumbbells. I'm going to have the thing in my mind already, and I'm going to start looking for a very specific type of product, and I'm going to look for words that relate to a physical item, right? That's level one, and that's, in my view, going to fail very badly this year, coming forward, 2018, and in future years even worse, because that unimaginative and non-customer-centric approach is something that is best served by people who are good at producing widgets and products, which is the Chinese sellers who are now all over Amazon.com and know how to produce widgets cheaply. But what they don't know very well and what they clearly don't get is how to speak to their market, how to understand their market. And the one of the ways that shows up is their language, which is literally poor English. Now, it amazes me that some of these big sellers don't take the trouble and the money to ask somebody to just check their listing and improve the English. Tempting to offer. But for the moment, I'm going to stay away from that and help you instead. So the second thing to do then, the second level up, is to go, well, okay, but dumbbells, I mean, that's just the result of a search. Surely people might have put other words in than just very literal words relating to this physical object. Maybe they were looking for weights or lifting weights or weightlifting weights, which begins to be a bit broader, because then you're going to start looking at a broader range of keywords and you might find yourself a market that is not the same as just dumbbells, but is related to that, but which has a slightly different take on the keywords and is actually fulfills the gap between supply and demand, which is what we're all after, right? Now, that's one thing. But if you are, for example, a gym owner, and you know people that use dumbbells, and you know why, then you have a much more sophisticated understanding of who's behind the keywords and why people are putting them into Amazon in the first place. In other words, the search intent, the implied intent behind it, which requires a bit of understanding of psychology and language and marketing, which is why it's never going to be something that people who are very product-centered are going to be good at. And that gives us who focus on this and do it well an opportunity to try and beat out those people who simply produce a lot of widgets at a low price point, right? So if we understand our customer better, we can win despite that disadvantage. So what it comes down to is those keywords show an intent to solve a problem or feed a passion. So that is very, very important to know, because that is going to affect how you sell whatever widget you're selling. For example, if somebody puts in weightlifting because they are a 38-year-old man who feels skinny and wants to look buff, that is a completely different reason from, say, a 65-year-old woman who has osteoporosis and wants to harden up her bones because she fears a medical emergency if she falls over. Now, this is an example that comes from a recent client of mine I've been working with, so I'm not going to give away exact products, but you get the very idea that we're talking about. This is basically the kind of thing that you need to be thinking about. Now, it's much, much easier to do that if you understand a particular market. So if you have a background for 20 years as a gym trainer, or if you have been working in property, or something else, like you've been working in an office for 20 years, it seems crazy to me to abandon all the knowledge that you come from that situation with and to just go off in a randomly different direction. And the reason for that is because if you work in an office, to take another example, you understand the stationary ordering cycle of a big company. You understand the sort of pain that people have if you use a stapler 1,000 times a day, that it falls apart in your hand, that it doesn't staple things properly, that it isn't strong enough to get through a thick wadge of paper, whatever it is. You are your target market, which is always powerful, or you work with your target market, like in the case of the gym owner, for example. Then you know things that other people don't. So that is super smart to start with that. So for example, if you're going to be working in the stationery niche and selling stuff there on Amazon, the first thing I would do is look at who's your target market that's going to buy lots of stuff and is not too price sensitive. Okay, is somebody who buys for a medium-sized company, and I'm guessing here because I haven't really been a stationery supplier for a company, but you get the idea. They've worked for a medium-sized company, they're spending somebody else's money, and their pain is that the stuff they buy falls apart too easily. On the other hand, they have a budget and they don't want it to be excessively expensive as much as the high-end brands, right? Immediately, that gives you a kind of clear target to aim at. You're going for, if you like, affordable premium. It needs to be robust. It's for professional use. It's for people who want good quality and are prepared to pay somewhat more for it, but don't want to pay the premium quality for the big brands like Rexel or Staedtler or whatever the other big stationery brands are. Then you can start thinking about what words those people would use to shop with and the sorts of products that they would use to solve their problems. But it really starts with the person in the pain, comes to keywords, and then it shows up on Amazon in the form of keyword research, and then of course in the form of physical product listings. So if you start off your research with that sort of thing in mind, I truly believe that you're going to go much further if you follow through on that throughout the process of deciding which market you're going to go into, going for suppliers and finding what products you should sell, and then actually launching and then ongoing marketing. It's all going to be of a piece because it is serving one type of person with one type of pain. And therefore, you can gear everything to that person. And then, of course, the next layer up from that is the keywords. And indeed, you need to take a lot of notice of the keywords that people have when you're doing the marketing. But I think more importantly, you should do it when you're looking at the product selection, if you like, or the niche market you're going to go after. The product selection for people who need to deal with paper type products in offices is going to be much broader than if you just go, I'm going to sell staplers because everyone else is selling them. What if you sell a solution to putting together bits of paper? Maybe that's what you're selling, really. And that could include staplers, that could include paper clips, but it might include some revolutionary device that you and I have never heard of. But if you work in an office, you've just found out about it because you know about it from the inside track. Now, that's the perfect place to be. That doesn't always exist, but that's an example of the way you can end up when you start thinking from the point of view of a person and their problem and how to solve it for them rather than just a physical widget. Now, if you want to know more about this sort of stuff, there are going to be a lot of discussions about this going forward, but I will be putting a little list of some examples of my thinking about this on the show notes for this episode. So just get yourself over to the blog, amazingfba.com/blog, and you will find the latest episodes there. And if you want to find this one, you'll find the cheat sheet that goes with this. Also, I just want to point out that there is no substitute for keyword research. This is not an alternative to that. That is in addition to that. The other thing I want to say is this year, more than ever, I am really, really pushing for the idea of external traffic driving back to Amazon. Amazon is amazing at conversions because they have people's credit cards on file. They have their addresses. They have everything, really. Their phone numbers, their emails. They don't necessarily reveal them to us as marketers, but Amazon has them. So that means that the customers trust them a huge amount, and that shows up in incredible conversion rates. So Amazon is the place to sell stuff. However, it's not the only place where people shop or can be influenced to go and shop. So one of the things that I'm pushing big this year, and I've already interviewed Brian Burt from Amazon Influencer Marketing course, is influencer marketing. So getting a YouTuber, somebody with a Twitter following, someone with a blog, someone with a podcast even, although that doesn't lend itself so much to products, and somebody with an Instagram account or Pinterest with plenty of engaged followers to help you sell your product. And of course, once you clarify the person and the pain, that's going to really immensely help you to use that form of marketing. Because if you sell a stapler and all you can think of is like the odd person who like maybe uses staplers, that's not a very imaginative way of finding an audience, is it? You might think of people who are passionate about stationery, or you might look for office buyers. There is probably a little niche market out there being served by a YouTuber right now that has somebody who's passionate about your kind of product. But by thinking about the person and the pain, you're automatically thinking about a collection of people, which ties in beautifully with the idea of influencer marketing. So there's another big spin-off bonus of this. So in other words, I think your whole business marketing philosophy needs to be underpinned. And I say the word marketing in the broader sense of finding a market for a product rather than sticking lipstick on a pig, as they say. So advertising in the narrower sense of marketing, but the broadest possible sense of finding a market, finding a gap between supply and demand and stepping in there and supplying something that meets demand. That whole art is got to be underpinned by this idea of the person and the pain, or the person and the passion, and then how it's expressed on Amazon, as indeed in Google, as indeed in YouTube, which is via keywords. So hope that little rant helps you with your thinking in the new year. It's not something that you're going to get an immediate payoff from in the sense that it needs to pervade everything. But if you do this right, I honestly believe it is a completely different business model and you are going to beat the people who are just stuck in the product-centered thinking. Thanks for listening.